This first weekend in December has turned into one very long weekend. I mean, very, very long weekend, a macro long weekend. In Spanish, these momentous events in the calendar are known as puentes or bridges, and it's a loose term because a bridge is usually referred to as a situation in which, for example, Tuesday is a holiday. And you take Monday off to make it a 4-day weekend. That Monday acts as the bridge. But nowadays, it can be used for any long weekend. Now, the Spanish are not ones to use the system of setting aside Mondays to observe special moments in the year so that people can get their long weekend no matter what. They stubbornly stick to the day the holiday falls on. That can be better or worse depending on the year. At no point is this issue a bigger deal than the famous Puente de Diciembre, or December long weekend, which is always the first week in the month. The two holidays are December 6th, Constitution Day, and December 8th, the Immaculate Conception, a big day in the liturgical year. And well received by believers and atheists alike. This week is always insane because the fact that separate days are bank holidays in the same week, and then the other work days are often thrown in for good measure, makes it especially popular with families who are looking to travel, even though Christmas is right around the corner. December 7th, for example, usually becomes a day off too, especially for schools. Now, this year is especially crazy because December 6th falls on a Tuesday and December 8th is on a Thursday. So schools have been given Monday and Wednesday off too. So we are talking about a 6-day long weekend. And here's how ludicrous it's gotten. Friday, December 9th, is a regular school day. So people go back to school and children go back to the school just for that day and then head back into the weekend. Anyway, just why is December 6th Constitution Day? Well, this day marks the anniversary of the referendum that was held in 1978, so we are talking 44 years ago, when Spaniards were called upon to give their okay to the new constitution, which had been drafted by a commission, approved by the parliament, and published to be judged by the nation. So Spain's constitution is young, though it wasn't the first one. That first famous constitution came in 1812, known as the Constitution of 1812, and it was passed in the city of Cadiz, in the south of Spain, in Andalusia, in the middle of the Napoleonic occupation of Spain. In addition to a military invasion, the French also brought with them ideas of a republic, free of monarchy. And at the height of the Peninsular War, in which the Spanish, with the help of the English, slowly freed themselves from the French, a sector of society there, a group of members, many from the ruling class, met in the city of Cadiz and created what would be one of the most liberal constitutions of its day. It confirmed the concept of a nation, Spain as a nation, which was important for Spain's situation. It had a design for the division of powers. It included male suffrage, supported free press, and other basic rights. It was ratified and put into effect. This first constitution would earn the nickname La Pepa because it was passed on March 19th, St. Joseph's Day. That's Jose in Spanish, and the nickname for Jose is Pepe. But since the word constitution in Spanish is feminine, they called it Pepa. Many Spaniards were not willing to go that far, however. They sort of hoped for a mix, a kind of constitutional monarchy, with exiled King Fernando VII as their only hope. In fact, they dubbed him the Desired One. Unfortunately, it turned out that Fernando would be one of the most despotic rulers ever in the history of Spain. Within about 6 years, the constitution was all but thrown out. So, after a promising start, constitutionalism sort of floundered in Spain for many, many years, which doesn't mean there weren't other constitutions, it's just that they didn't get very far or their purpose constantly changed. So, some were a little bit more democratic and in favor of personal rights and freedoms, while others gave more power to the monarch, restricted voting rights, and were very conservative in nature. You had a constitution in 1837, another one in 1845, and they proposed one for 1868, but little came of that. The next big one, big in the sense that it lasted the longest, was the Constitution of 1876, which returned more power to the king. In fact, it restored the monarchy. But in addition to that, male suffrage was adopted and more rights were granted, like the freedom of the press and religion. It would be Spain's longest lasting constitution to date, so everything sort of sounded positive, but it also be a kind of faux democratic system, and it was installed for decades. The two main political parties, a conservative party and a liberal one, with the approval of the king, would take turns running the government, and it was known as turnism, turnismo. And while it did provide a stretch of relative stability to the country, it brought with it, obviously, corruption, elitism, and a false sense of security. Many of the woes Spain had been unable to resolve previously would creep back into the forefront. The political situation would eventually destabilize and degenerate and result in a military intervention and dictatorship during the 1920s. And finally, the Second Republic came, and with it, a new constitution in 1931. This charter was modern, in accordance with 20th century trends and ideals, universal suffrage, for example, separation of church and state, widespread freedoms and rights. But by that time, Spain was a veritable tinderbox, ideologically speaking. Exacerbated by the increasing separatist movements. So the Second Republic outlasted the first one, the one from the 1870s, but not by much. Before the decade was out, the Franco regime had taken over, and there had been a civil war for 3 of those 9 years. And that brings us to Franco's death on November 20th, 1975. And yet another chance to get it right in terms of constitution. Now, just how this constitution came about is pretty fascinating, and I'll try to explain it to you without making it too confusing. To begin with, the role of King Juan Carlos I was crucial. Remember, Juan Carlos had been handpicked by Franco to be his successor. Franco would probably assume that the monarch, who had in certain ways been groomed by the dictator, would carry on with the tradition of trying to control just about every part of the political and social aspects of Spanish society. But the world was a very different place in the 1970s, and Juan Carlos was no dictator. It soon became clear that he, along with many other people in Spain, had the intention of transitioning the country into a democracy. But they had to be careful about how they went about this. They wanted to make sure that the process was completely legal, sort of to quell any sort of resentment or anger. And in order to do that, they ironically used Franco's framework, known as the fundamental laws, to get the ball rolling. Since this governmental setup allowed for modifications in the laws, they took advantage of that provision to pass a law, this was done through a referendum, of political reform. The president at the time, an old hardcore Francoist named Carlos Arias Navarro, stepped down in protest, and Juan Carlos replaced him with a younger, dashing politician, a former member of the Francoist movement, but a much more moderate one. And he was a perfect match in the sense that he would probably appease most factions. His name was Adolfo Suarez. And if that name sounds familiar to you, it's probably because Madrid's airport is named after him. In addition to that, he was a very important person, a key figure during this period of Spanish history. The next step was to hold general elections. That took place in June of 1977. And once again, the king played an important role. For example, he insisted that the Communist Party be declared legal before the elections were held, which was this was a serious bone of contention for most conservatives. But Juan Carlos argued that for democracy to work, all Spaniards, regardless of their ideology, had to be represented and had to have the guarantee that they'll be represented. Once the elections were over, a commission was created to come up with a new framework, which in reality was a whole new framework. They were going to change everything, basically. This group of Spain's political elite became known as the Fathers of the Constitution. There were seven members. Now, they didn't quite represent the different components of the Spanish political spectrum at the time, but rather the largest factions being represented in the parliament. Three of them belonged to the party known as UCD, which was a coalition of some 15 parties from around the country. They were politically in the center, and they were led by Adolfo Suarez. The UCD would be sort of the center of gravity during this transition period, and probably for the better, but would eventually implode the minute the new form of government was up and running. But anyway, then you had the Socialist Party and then the early sort of proto party of what is now the Conservative Party, the Partido Popular, PP, and two parties from Catalonia. Nowadays, many look back with nostalgia to a time when the sense was that the different groups, the opposing parties, put aside their differences in order to obtain a common good. While this may have been a fairly good description of the final result, getting there was no easy task, and there were constant debates and arguments over just about every one of the articles that made up the proposed constitution. Prickly issues included abortion, divorce, the death penalty, the role of the church, the geographic setup of the country. This last point was of special interest to regions like the Basque Country and Catalonia. Just how these regions were defined was very important. And as is so typical of this country, when people come to an impasse, the best way to look for a solution is by heading to the nearest bar or restaurant and working it out over a drink or a meal. One classic spot in Madrid, José Luis, which is located right near the famous Santiago Bernabéu Stadium, that's Real Madrid Stadium, turned out to be the host of several near sleepless nights at the restaurant. The gatherings were so successful that there is a plaque outside the restaurant commemorating those important days and paying tribute to su the successful negotiations, making this restaurant feel that in a certain way it contributed to the new constitution. The bill first had to be approved by the parliament, and that happened on October 31st, 1978, and then it was put to the people to give their opinion. The date was December 6th. The turnout was nearly 67%, and of that number, around 90% was in favor. So it was pretty much overwhelming, though, if you look at the numbers, only about 60% of the potential voting population actually approved it. But still, it's a pretty solid number. In any event, we can consider this to be a success, a major success, when you think that just 3 years before, the country was still being run by a fascist dictator, and that it came about with relatively little civil strife. Even if you include the terrorism caused by the Basque terrorist group ETA. So that was the big moment. The following year, the first democratic elections under the new constitution were held, completing this phase of Spain's fledgling democracy. And this system has continued to this day. Some of you may be asking yourselves how the old Francoist took this new situation. After all, a few years before that, they were the undisputed rulers of the land. Well, it may surprise some of you, but some of the members of Franco's final years actually took an active part in this transition. As I was mentioning before, Adolfo Suarez, Spain's first prime minister, was originally a government worker for the Franco regime. However, the most extreme wing, the most radical wing of that regime, many of whom belonged to the military, was less than enthralled by what they saw and heard and attempted to overthrow the government on February 23rd, 1981. It failed almost immediately, but for about 12 hours there, no one really knew what was going to happen. In fact, it was Juan Carlos who went on live television the night of the coup and ordered the rebellion to end, arguing that it was the soldiers, the military's duty to obey the Constitution. Anyway, the failed coup and the elections the following year that were won by the Socialist Party marked the end of the transition and the consolidation of the Constitution. And ever since 1983, December 6th, the day of the referendum, has been an official holiday in Spain to commemorate this important, very important moment. This document for years was a source of great pride for many Spaniards from all walks of life. It was a victory for sensitivity and sensibility over resentment and bitterness from the Civil War and 40 years of fascist dictatorship, a model for other nations who were transitioning from an authoritarian regime to a democratic one. And it was billed as such for the next few decades. However, while many still embrace the Spanish Constitution as a great document that has helped this country rebuild and grow into a modern democracy, it has also been a source of debate among certain sectors. First of all, you have republicanism, and by that I'm not referring to a political party, but rather a form of government. That is a republic as opposed to a constitutional monarchy, which is what Spain currently has. The republicanos, or the republicans, are generally left-leaning individuals who see no need for a monarchy and would probably prefer something similar to what France has. And in light of the scandals surrounding the final years of Juan Carlos I, despite all that he did for the Constitution originally, calls for the removal of the institution have been a bit louder. Then there are others who advocate a federalist system, which would give more self-rule, more autonomy to the different regions, even though Spain, in certain ways, is already as close to being considered a federal government without actually being one. Then you have nationalism, which in a lot of ways translates more as separatism, the regions seeking independence from Spain, especially Catalonia, and to a certain extent, the Basque Country, have always been quite wary of the Constitution, especially the Basque Country, where probably the lowest numbers actually voted for the Constitution. In Catalonia, actually, they were in the referendum in 1978, voted overwhelmingly in favor of the Constitution. But anyway, if you are one of those who are looking for a way out, there is nothing about the Constitution that will be of interest to you. Interestingly enough, the Constitution defines Spain as a nation made up of nationalities, which is sort of an ambiguous description, or which just what exactly is a nationality. But anyway, many Catalans feel that their land should be considered a nation too, alongside Spain. So that sort of stuff is constantly being brought up. Anyway, we all know that every constitution is subject to debate, modification, and amendments. It's not wrong, it's actually quite healthy if the process is done maturely and sensibly. Times change, the world changes, and there are moments when even documents which are as revered as a constitution need to adapt. Spain's constitution has had to take on generations of ideological and geopolitical tension, strife, and conflict, which makes keeping it together a particularly difficult task, but so far so good. It's a solid framework and it's pretty much holding its own. And if you talk about this sort of Magna Carta with people who were old enough during the time when the transition was happening and when the constitution was being passed, they certainly talk about it with a sense of pride. It was a moment, a time of optimism, and many people are really proud of the constitution. Anyway, celebrations on this day don't go very far. Most people just take the day off, but you can do things like visit the Senate or the Parliament chambers. The doors to these buildings are open to the public on these days. And then speeches are given as usual. And then a huge Spanish flag is raised in the Plaza de Colón in Madrid, Columbus Square. It's a massive 300 square meter banner, and it's usually waving all year long, but they have a special ceremony on that day. And I think that's about it. That's the basics of the day of the Constitution or Constitution Day. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast by Brian Spaindemade. Please feel free to leave us with any comments because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Castos. If you wish to support Brian Spaindemade, we greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to bring you the most accurate information about Spain, its history, and its culture. And so if you wish to support it, click on our PayPal donate button, or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts or support us on a regular basis, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.